Elizabeth Elliot says, there's a difference between a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day and a peaceful and happy one. I think it does not depend nearly so much on what happens as it depends on your attitude and your response. Welcome to Gateway to Joy, a ministry of Elizabeth Elliot, author of more than 20 books, including Through Gates of Splendor and Shadow of the Almighty, helping you face your day with a godly attitude. Here's your friend, Elizabeth Elliot.
You are loved with an everlasting love. That's what the Bible says. And underneath are the everlasting arms. This is your friend, Elizabeth Elliot, completing today my story about Gladys Aylward of China. I told a story last week that maybe I should repeat because to me it's just so charming, but it was a personal conversation that I was having with Gladys Aylward. The two of us were missionaries. I had lost my husband about 4 years earlier, and Gladys had never had a husband. And she told me how when she went to China, she had no thought whatsoever of ever getting married, hadn't even considered such a thing. But after she'd been there for a few years, a couple from England came out to work as missionaries, and she observed their life and realized that they had something very beautiful that she began to wish she had. And so, being a no-nonsense sort of a person, she prayed, and she just asked God to call a man from England, send him straight out to where she was, and have him propose. And then she leaned toward me on the sofa and pointed her bony little finger in my face. And she said, Elizabeth, I believe God answers prayer. He called him, but he never came. Is there a man listening to me today whom God might be calling to get married? There just might be. You know, the Apostle Paul said, when I became a man, I put away childish things. It bothers me to see that too many men today are spending lots of money and huge amounts of time on adult toys. All kinds of vehicles, all kinds of amusements, all kinds of fitness, machinery, etc., etc. And it just might be, if you were to stop and listen for the still small voice, that God is calling you to take adult responsibility and to become a husband. Well, that's just one of my little parentheses that I can't resist putting in every now and then. We left Gladys Aylward with her 100 children at the edge of a river. They didn't know how they were going to get across, but a nice man came along, inserted his fingers in his mouth, and whistled loudly 3 times in a peculiar, piercing way. From across the river came 3 answering whistles. 2 little figures far off on the other bank pushed a boat into the water and began to scull it across. I cannot thank you enough, she said. I thought it was the end of us when we couldn't cross the river. The young officer saw her sway a little as one of the children pushed against her. He looked at her curiously. You are ill, he said. You should find a doctor. The Nationalist troops on the other side of the river will have a doctor. I'm all right, she said. When we get to Siang, I shall be all right. With shouts of glee, the children filled the boat. Soldiers ferried them rapidly to the other side. They returned, and more of the children piled in. On the third journey, the soldier helped the foreign woman into the boat with the last group of children. His platoon had gathered around to help. As the boat moved away from the bank, he called his men to attention and gravely saluted. He called, "Good luck, foreigner!" He turned to walk back along the bank to his platoon. As he walked, he looked into the sky and listened for the drone of Japanese planes. None came. It was curious about that foreigner. If this had been close to a large city or a settlement, he could have understood it. But wandering across a battlefield, escorting an army of ragged Chinese children? This was indeed very curious. Well, she got the children to safety. And by that time, she really was very ill. The flies were buzzing about the room, a strange room, with a clean bed and a small bedside table and limp, bright-colored curtains at the windows. Where was she? What had happened? They tried to tell her. She had been brought to Sing Ping in an ox cart by some peasants, and to Siang in a private railroad car. She had lain for days and weeks close to death. But now she could not remember those weeks. And she thought that perhaps when she was so sick in the strange village home, the Chinese women had become frightened and had persuaded peasants to take her to the mission in their cart. There, and in Siang, the senior physician had taken care of her, and the nurses and a great many friends. She wasn't going to die, and she had saved the children. Gradually, while she lay in the hospital bed, all this became clear to her. The children were safe. They had food and clothes and even schooling. They had cried when there was no boat to take them across the Yellow River, but now they were safe. As the days passed, she gradually gained more strength until presently the senior physician was able to arrange for her to be taken out of the house to a friend of his in the country outside Xi'an. There, and later in the homes of other friends, they succeeded in nursing her back to some state of health, and she could return to Siang, although she was still not really well. Linan, this is the man with whom she had fallen in love, a nationalist Chinese who wanted to marry her, came down to visit Siang, and she was glad to see him. He implored her to marry him and go with him to Chongqing, where he was now stationed. But somehow, away from the mountain country here in Siang, their relationship had altered. She did not know what it was, only that things were different. She knew that if the war had not driven her out of Shanxi, she would have married Linan, and her life would have taken quite another course. "Wait," she had said then. "We cannot get married while this terrible war is on, or while we are here fighting." He had waited, and now it was too late. Now, instead of that inner exaltation, the rounded delight of knowing that she loved and was loved in return, there was this nagging anxiety to do the right thing by her God, her children, and the man she loved. Somewhere in the mountains between Yangcheng and the Yellow River, somewhere on the plains between the Yellow River and the old capital of Siang, somewhere in the unreal world of delirium and the fevers of her illness, certitude had been replaced by anxiety. All this, in tears, she tried to tell Linan. All this, in the despair of his love, he tried to brush aside and say that it would be better when she was well. In Chongqing, he said, he would have high rank. They could make a home there and be happy. The children could go to school there. But it was no use. The colored bird had flown away. Perhaps it could not live in the forest of deep despair that grew all over China. There was so much work to be done for the Lord, and she, the small woman, the small disciple, had her part to play in that work. She said goodbye to him at the station outside Xi'an and walked back through the narrow streets with an overwhelming ache of loneliness in her heart, aware that she would never know completely if she had acted wisely or not. Only that through all her waking days she would remember Linan as the one man she had loved. The war swept him away, and she never saw him again. Gladys Aylward is shy and very modest. She carries these things in her heart. She rarely speaks of them. A little parlor maid from London traveled alone across Siberia because of a single letter from a woman whom she had never met. That woman, of course, was Jeannie Lawson, the 74-year-old woman who died not very long after Gladys arrived. A young girl, Gladys, lived alone for years in a remote mountain city, speaking a strange language, wearing native clothes, becoming friend and counselor to a people so foreign in thought and culture that at first their every custom seemed alien. A single-minded and determined girl conversed for hours with a learned Mandarin, as he propounded the intricate subtleties of his philosophy. Yet armed only with her own forthright experience and inspired intuitions, she converted him finally to Christianity. A woman, tireless and fearless, traveled alone month after month through the dangerous mountain regions of Shaanxi on errands of mercy and errands of war. This woman was Gladys Aylward, Ai Wei De, the virtuous one, the small woman. They will not forget her in Shaanxi, and those who have known her since will not forget her either. For Gladys Aylward is one of the remarkable women of our generation, possessing an inner exaltation and an abiding tenacity of purpose that can make anything possible. Even a trip across the wild and pitiless mountains of China, without money, without food, and with 100 children. And that's the end of Alan Burgess's book. I just want to say that that woman made an indelible impression in my life. I met her probably just a few years before she died. I think she died in the 1960s. The Bible tells us that we are to imitate the faith of our leaders. I encourage you to read Christian biographies so that you can see the hand of God in all the ups and downs, the sorrows, the joys, the perplexities, the dangers, the disasters of one individual life. It'll help you to trust Him.
You've been listening to Gateway to Joy with Elizabeth Elliot, author of over 20 books, including Through Gates of Splendor and The Path of Loneliness, Finding Your Way Through the Wilderness to God. Join us next time for more encouragement and challenge from Elizabeth Elliot. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network.